I was like, wait a minute. So you're telling me we're going to drop something on somebody's computer and then we're going to follow them around the internet and we're going to see what they're doing and then we're going to target based on that? I go, that's horrible. This is a terrible. They're going to get a lot of trouble. But there was no trouble to get into.
Early to bed, early to rise, eat right and advertise. Early to bed, early to rise. And one more thing, get your name out there.
Hi, I'm Marty Kine, and this is Paleo Ad Tech, the amazing podcast about the first two decades of advertising technology. And today, I am delighted to welcome Jay Schwedelson to the program. Jay is president and CEO of Outcome Media and founder of SubjectLine.com, as well as Guru Events, which hosts the Guru Conference for email marketers. And back in the 1990s, during the first era of digital advertising, Jay was the founder of a company called WebConnect, which may or may not have been the very first ad network. He had a front row seat at the birth of that business model that was so important to the first era of ad tech.
I grew up around marketing. I grew up in Long Island, not the U.S.
Long Island. But I'll tell you
what. My mom was a school teacher and my dad worked there for a magazine publisher. And my mom, they had layoffs in the county for all the teachers. She lost her job. And my dad was in charge of trying to find ways to market these magazines. There was no, this is like 1980 or so. There was no like lists or data or anything back then. And he got frustrated.
What kind of magazines were they, Jay?
It was subscriber magazines. You know, it could be anything from like a People magazine. They couldn't figure out a way to really expand the universe of people that they were sending the magazines to. So he came home one day and said to my mom, I think we should start up our own little company and we should try to compile lists of names and addresses. So that way all the different magazines that are out there can promote their publications because there were no lists. There was no
genius. Yeah.
So they said, and so my mom had no job. She goes, great, let's do this. And they literally, they closed off the garage door to our house. They put cement and they put some chairs and desks and they took all the money that they had, which wasn't a lot. And they bought a TRS-80 computer and they started compiling lists and they started to sell these lists that they compiled. That's the business that I grew up around. And that's all I ever knew was marketing and direct marketing and database marketing. And so literally our kitchen table was, that was it. From the time I was like four on, that was it.
And it was founded in a garage. Amazing.
Oh, big time in the garage. We were in the garage for a little while, for sure.
What was the name of that company?
So that company was called WMI. It really fed into how WebConnect started, which is very odd. So as I'm going,
and I have to ask you, did you work for them?
Oh yeah,
you had to work.
Yeah. So when I was starting, I would say about 11 years old, I was doing pulling booth duty at different marketing trade shows. I mean, I was at Comdex for years, which was, you know, back then just a huge technology event like CES is now. From the time I could even do anything relevant, that's all I was doing was being involved in this database marketing business. And then what happened was, that business evolved. They ended up buying a little farmhouse and moving their list business to this farmhouse. And this industry blossomed where they started to exclusively represent databases. So, for example, Sports Illustrated, there were no privacy laws at the time. You know, this is the early 80s. Sports Illustrated would have their subscriber database of, you know, a million people. And they would find somebody who would exclusively represent their subscriber database to have it be used by catalogers, like a Pottery Barn or somebody would come in and say, hey, I want to mail my catalog to the subscriber base of Sports Illustrated because we think it's a good fit. This WMI business would work along with, there were now a lot of competitors, to get these exclusive representations of these subscriber databases. And it was this whole media representation business. And that's what I grew up around. And now, fast forward, now I'm heading into college. It's like around 93, 94. Internet starting to get going, barely. I mean, I really barely get going. I mean, probably
The Netscape appeared in 1994.
We're talking about
first
like,
browser.
We're talking about the very, very, you're going on Prodigy. You think you're doing something.
AOL, yeah.
Exactly. So now it's 1994-ish, and I'm like, I don't think I want to do direct mail because that's what the whole business was. This direct mail thing's really boring. And I sat back.
So you thought you would rebel.
But that's all I knew was marketing. Mm. So I said, what does this mean, whatever? And I remember we were looking around the internet, and I was like, oh, there were just sites, whatever. And so what if there was a business where we could exclusively represent a website the same way that my folks business represented a subscriber list? We could exclusively represent a website, and we could try to bring links to their website that would link to other websites. They weren't even called ads. They were just links. There were no even images. And I said to myself, okay, if I can convince any of these little websites that existed to let me bring them advertisers to put links on their websites, I would pay them a fee and I would exclusively represent them the same way that my folks did in their list business. And that was the idea. Selling ads, which didn't exist, and they were not even display ads. They were at the time just links. So the idea was, okay, I'm going to call up every single website that exists, because there wasn't that many. I'm going to call every site and say, I'm going to bring you ads. I'm going to pay you every time I bring you an ad. And at the time, people were like, they didn't even know, like, do I have a website? Who cares? Sure. You want to give me money? I mean, didn't even look like a website. And I had some of my college friends helping me out, just calling up sites randomly. Hi, we have a company called WebConnect. Can we be your exclusive representative for your website? And we'd send them a little contract. Fast forward.
Like, so these sites didn't, you just found these sites and they didn't necessarily have ads already. So you were suggesting.
There were no ads by anybody. Ads didn't exist.
So you were an early visionary, it sounds like.
There was no ads. I mean, zero.
But you had a feeling there would be.
Yeah. It was just the idea of, you could put a link here.
Why
and
not?
Then they can go back to this other website.
Get
it wasn't. Yeah. I didn't have a business plan. It was like, oh, that makes sense. And you'd be like, oh, you'll give me like $50, $100, $500. Oh, great. And so we made a zillion phone calls and we got about 1,000 websites. And at the time, we had people like NBC Sports and Sharper Image and Omaha Steaks. These were some of the earliest websites that existed. And they didn't care that we were their exclusive representative. There were no ads.
Big business.
Hard to imagine the internet with no ads, like zero. So
the company at this stage, though, is, are you in college or is this after?
So I'm in college. I'm hustling between being in college at the University of Florida.
Yeah.
And then I was using some office space at my folks' company, and it started to grow, and it was just a chaotic time in my life. It started to actually become a little company, and I was going
based
to trade shows.
Based in Florida. Right.
And I'm going to trade shows, leaving on here on the weekend, missing classes, whatever.
Right.
Just crazy.
Entrepreneur. Yeah.
It was just a bizarre time. And so now we have this network, WebConnect. Right. Yeah. I'm like, oh my God. And now the internet, now fast forward a year or two, other networks are popping up. And now this idea of exclusively representing sites, building an ad network, there's competition. We had advertisers. It was happening. It was going decent. But then everything went like kaplooey. Really, it just got crazy. Really, internet advertising exploded over the course of like 18 months. It went from this little idea to just everybody was just going crazy trying to figure it out.
Okay. Gentlemen. Start your engines.
Then you had DoubleClick, right? People like,
yeah. So DoubleClick came in. DoubleClick, Kevin O'Connor and Kevin Ryan, those guys came in. And originally, it was us and DoubleClick. Everywhere we went, we were banging heads with them. Who was going to get who to sign up to be an exclusively represented? They were an ad network too at the beginning.
Yeah.
And then a little bit later on, people like 24/7. Came in. There was a company called Real Media that 24/7 bought. There was one called Flycast. There was a bunch of different networks, but originally it was us and DoubleClick.
Ad.com.
But DoubleClick went in one direction while, frankly, we didn't. And they clearly had a better plan than we did on a couple of fronts. What they realized very quickly was the idea of an ad network was flawed, right? This idea of you're exclusively representing a website and that's the business model, that was flawed. What they realized was internet advertising was really a technology business, a software business at the time, where you were going to serve ads across many different sites, and you were going to be doing advertising targeting audiences rather than placing ads on specific sites because certain audiences went to that site. And so they were fundamentally right. We were fundamentally wrong because we stayed as an ad network and they did not. They became a technology, which everyone started to adopt. But then the other massive error that we made, although today I could sleep well knowing I made this error, was that the cookie technology was in its infancy. Now we all know what cookie technology was. Back then, it was like, what is that? And it comes out, and the idea is obviously you could place a little file on somebody's computer, and then you're able to track what they're doing and then be able to target them and demographics and information, all this stuff. And I remember we sat there and we were like, this was DoubleClick was starting to do this, to use the cookie to really do advanced targeting. And their advertisers were doing great. The performance was like killing whatever our advertisers were doing. I was like, wait a minute. So you're telling me we're going to drop something on somebody's computer and then we're going to follow them around the internet and we're going to see what they're doing and then we're going to target based on that? That's horrible. This is a terrible. They're going to get a lot of trouble. But there was no trouble to get into.
So your objection was it was more on sort of ethical grounds? You felt it was an invasion of privacy?
Yes, it was. I felt it was an invasion of privacy, which of course it is, and took the moral high ground. We had ads, I'll never forget them, we had ads with exploding cookies in them. And our whole thing was, we don't use cookies. Yeah. But that was our motto, like, we don't use cookies.
We're What's an exploding cookie?
We literally had a picture of like a Chips Ahoy, and then it would explode.
Oh, I see. An image of a cookie exploding.
An Apple cookie exploding.
Oh, you were doing the Apple thing. You're taking privacy as a brand. So yes, that was your brand.
That was our brand. Unfortunately, cool. We were an Apple.
A little ahead of your time.
Yeah. About 20 years.
Maybe 25.
Right, exactly.
Because DoubleClick was quite explicit about using cookies and quite open. It was in their patent. And they would sell it to advertisers and publishers as well.
Totally acceptable. Totally. They were right. Yeah. We were wrong. They sold for over $3 billion. We didn't. And there's a go down to who did right and who did wrong. They got it. Okay. I have no qualms about it. But that's really why the WebConnect business didn't go into that type of direction because of that issue, if you will, our stance.
And did that come from your history in direct mail and database marketing, or was it more of a personal thing?
No, it did come from the world of direct marketing, this idea of usage of people's information. I think, frankly, it's too close to it, and it just didn't feel right. If we go back in time, when Amazon first started, it was like, no one's going to buy anything. No one's going to give their credit card information.
People were reluctant at first. They were. To use credit card.
And that was like how I felt about the cookie. And now it's, you look back on it, you're like, I don't care. You can have everyone have my credit card on every website. So it was a strange time. And so, yeah, the idea of an ad network, and there were a bunch of us that were ad networks. DoubleClick was an ad network. We were an ad network. 24/7 became an ad network. Real Media was a newspaper ad network. They got bought by 24/7. Flycast was the first remnant ad network, and they got so there was a bunch of players back then, but DoubleClick really won the day. And then ultimately, there were other players that had advertising technology, like Avenue A that sold, that became Aquantitative, which was Microsoft's ad serving platform for a long time. So yeah, it got crazy really fast.
What, in terms of the company in the initial stages, so you were in Florida, did you raise money? I mean, did you go to venture capitalists?
You know, we were never really part of the cool crew.
But you're in Florida, so you're a little out of the geographical mainstream there.
Yeah, and we were also still living in what I was still living in, you know, in my traditional direct marketing world. We did have a partnership with a publisher called CMP, where they did invest a few million dollars. CMP published things like Computer Reseller News, and a variety of different technology publications. They were also out on
trade publications, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Controlled circulation magazines. And they invested $a few million. We ended up buying them back out. And quite honestly, for me personally, this has nothing to do with the history of internet advertising. I learned that I like to not have lots of investors and lots of partners and raise all sorts of money. I like a much more conservative path. So there were a lot of lessons learned. And then we quickly, as we saw that we were losing the battle in the internet advertising space, we pivoted towards email in a big way, which was a good play for us. And at the time, a lot of the ad networks also were getting involved in email. People don't even remember that.
Dart did.
Then Dart Mail, which was became one of the largest email players that existed. And 24/7 had 24/7 Mail, which was one of the biggest email players that existed. Almost all the major ad tech companies originally were also major players in the email space as well. But then they punted on that and thankfully left me in there and it all worked out okay.
So when did that pivot happen, the pivot toward email? in a way for media?
That was really around 97, 98 that we started going heavily into the world of email. What, frankly, here's what happened. We were getting our clobber with WebConnect. And I had a lot of servers, had a boatload of servers. I'm like, hey, wait a minute. We could use the same servers to send out email, the same idea. And the reason that DoubleClick and 24/7 and some of the other major ad tech companies punted on email was it was too decentralized. DoubleClick was able to look at internet advertising and say, hey, we could serve every ad and we can control that. But email's so decentralized that it was a hard thing to get your arms around.
So in terms of in your ad network days, did you build any technology? Because you signed up publishers and you got clients. And so what kind of tech did you guys end up building?
Yeah, so we had our own proprietary ad serving tool called ICS, which stands for Impression Click Sale. Frankly, because we weren't utilizing cookie technology, it was pretty rudimentary. There was a very basic level targeting that we were able to do. And so that was what held us back.
So the targeting was just based on what kind of website it was, right?
Basically, right. No. Yeah, it was basically, oh, sports website, great. So
it's
one time we had 20 golf websites. That we would say that this is the golf channel, not the golf channel as we know it today, but this is the golf channel. You could have your ad appear on all these golf websites. And we tried to basically make
it contextual.
Exactly. And it worked. It just didn't work as well.
So that was, you had this ad server. Was there anything else? If I were a publisher and I wanted to join your ad network, was that automated in some way or was that manual process?
Yeah, so we created something called WISE, the Web Index Site Evaluator. And we tried to bring together every site that was accepting advertising on the internet at the time. And we got pretty close. That sounds ridiculous now, but there was a time I had a bulletin board in my room. I remember at the time I had every website that existed on my bulletin, every single one. So it was
1996.
Like, that was like in 94 or whatever. I was like, okay, this is every website. I have it.
Like Yahoo.
Yeah. And Yahoo, in a lot of ways, if you think about it, Yahoo is very similar to WebConnect. Not exactly. Blew it because Google realized they were going to index the internet. Yeah. Yahoo was trying to be a directory. They were trying to manually list everybody. And concept-wise, it's the same reason why Google won and Yahoo lost. And so that fundamental understanding of the internet was really a game changer for a lot of companies.
So you had just about every... So in terms of the ads themselves, you obviously evolved beyond just text ads. You were serving banner ads.
I'll remember the first time we served an actual image, an image-based ad. We started cheering, started high-fiving. We're like, oh my God, it showed up. There it is. And then we worked with RealPlayer, which was the very first company to do any type of animated advertising on the internet, or you would have your RealPlayer to watch media or anything. And so we were, I believe, I don't want to misstate history, but I believe that we were the first of their partners to serve any type of animated internet advertisement. You could also play audio on it. It was pretty cool. But the problem was they were also a flawed thing that you had to have a real player, they called it a real player, to be able to see it. So it was like a super subset of people.
So most people couldn't see it. So they saw the default, just a picture, right? Yeah.
It was a mess. The whole thing was a mess, but it was fun.
Yeah. So what was your, did you have an office? Did you have a kind of central location? What was that like in the early days?
So we had an office, wasn't particularly excited. We called it the bowling alley. It was a very long, weird stretch of chairs.
Where was it?
It's down here in Boca Raton. Too far from where I am right now. It was crazy because, you know, we had a bank of people that all they were doing were trying to sign up websites. They were literally just calling up websites saying, can we represent you? Can we represent you? And on one hand,
salespeople, like a boiler room.
I don't want to use that term, but essentially it was like, on one hand, we were signing up websites. On the other hand, all these other networks that had raised like a ton of money were taking our other websites that were already in our network out of our network. So it was like this, like really
the hamster wheel.
It was very competitive, extremely competitive.
Eventually, I saw a list from not that much later of ad networks, and there were lots of them, dozens.
So many. So many. And boy, how many ad networks exist today? I think none, because the model doesn't, because now what happened was, and that was the other thing that started happening in advertising. Yeah. First, you had networks come in, then you had technology start to replace networks. And then you had site publishers become their own sales agents because the revenue stream became large enough.
So what was your pricing model for the ad network? Like, how did you make money?
At the very beginning, we were charging $50 a month to go onto a website, which is ridiculous. You literally would get a text ad, go on a website, and we would charge the advertiser $50 a month. and you could be on a 10 website.
It sounds cheap.
It was super cheap because there was no traffic and it was just a text link and it was bizarre. Right. And then we got into, you know, CPM based, you know, cost per thousand impressions. There was no media being sold on a cost per click. Zero. It did cost per click. That was frankly another battle that really started to occur. It was all based on impression-based stuff. And then cost per click really started to come into the picture, I would say around 99 to 2001. And that became a really big battleground because obviously it was a sort of a money loser at the time for the site owner because they didn't have enough traffic.
Yeah, because advertising.com made their whole thing. They sold on cost per click, but they bought CPM. So they had to do all this kind of fancy math behind the scenes to do arbitrage.
Right.
And, yeah. But it required a lot of traffic. Basically,
yeah. And the other thing that started to happen with the people selling on the impression-based stuff, there was a lot of disagreements between publishers' count of how many impressions they were serving, the advertisers' count of how many impressions they thought they were receiving. It was just a mess because the technology was so new. There was a lot of inaccurate reporting going on, which caused us a nightmare to get to a point where it's sophisticated. Nowadays, it's pretty simple.
Your reporting, so your ICS, was that your reporting? So
yep.
Generated the reports. So you counted the impressions and the clicks.
That's right.
Okay. And then what about, so the dot-com boom was happening, I guess, at the same time when all the competition appeared. What was your experience of the boom years? Crazy and out of control?
It was crazy and out of control. I think where we benefited, if I fast forward today, so Outcome Media, my business, we're really an agency. We are a media agency and we're about 110 people or so. And we benefit even today from the fact that we went through all that. When we pivoted to email, we still did a lot in digital media. Right. So when the dot-com boom was happening, we became a little bit of a jack of all trades. Advertisers, we abandoned being the publisher representative and we became the advertisers, became our clients. And we started to do media buying and execution, digital media buying, email, all sorts of stuff. So we really got to reap a lot of the benefits of all of our relationships during the dot-com boom. But then there was just a lot of funny money going on. So a lot of funny money.
Like a little bit of a bubble.
We used to get so many, because we were buying so much media, on behalf of digital media, we were one of the largest media buyers at the time for digital media. All the different sites would try to entice us to place our clients' ads on their sites. And they would forget about these parties, and the parties were completely out of control. Ad tech and it was just like Jupiter events, and there was a million of these different events, but we would get inundated with gifts. And I'll never forget, one day I got a call from the reception. You gotta come out here, it's the craziest gift. I'm like, what? And there was a crate. I'm like, what is that? And we opened it up, it was a crate of live lobsters. I'm like, what is this? What the hell is this?
That's not a good gift.
They're like, you gotta buy on our site. I'm like, this is out of control.
A little too creative. Yeah.
It was totally wild.
But it sounds like you became more of a services business, I guess, at a certain
point. Yeah, we became a media buying organization for digital media, email, and other. Now we do podcasts, all this other stuff. But yeah, that we became basically a media buyer and ultimately ended up using Dart to serve our ads, which was fairly sad.
You use your arch rival. And I looked in the Internet Archive, you can get old websites, and one of your sites from 2001, and it has opt-in email, and then list brokerage, list management, database, just like you said, so all these different services. I want to ask you though, what is the opt-in email service? How did that work, or does it?
So now there's all sorts of different versions of email marketing today, but back then there just was not a lot of email data. There were bad email databases that you could buy in a CD-ROM, right?
And yeah, like for spam.
Spam and horrible stuff. Believe it or not, back then there were a lot of lists being generated where people were saying, I would like to receive email offers about sports or about shopping or about whatever. And this idea of these opt-in databases to be used for marketing, truly collected in opt-in fashion, became proliferated. There was one company in particular that really turned it into a big business called Postmaster Direct. People don't realize this, but Postmaster Direct was the precursor for another company called ReturnPath. And that's where they got that all started. And so that was the origins of opt-in email, which all happened around 98, 99.
So what ultimately happened to WebConnect then? Did you drop the name at a certain point?
Yeah, we dropped the name, and we Alchemedia became our agency brand about 12 years ago or so. Email became, we were doing so much in the email space for our clients that we started a website called subjectline.com, because so many of our clients would be coming to us saying, what do I do in my subject line? And everyone was talking about how to get it more form better. It opens also. We decided to put something out there, and to this day, same model. It's completely free, and you go there and you can put in a subject line, tells you how good or bad it is. And now it got so popular, we've checked over 15 million subject lines. And we had plenty of offers at the time. Before things went haywire, we had plenty of offers of people that wanted to acquire WebConnect. But the reality of it is, I'm very glad I didn't do it, because all of the, I would say almost all the offers that we had received were stock-based offers. And back then, if you look at the stock companies like, remember, like CMGI or even Netscape or any of these guys, I mean, their stocks were totally ridiculous. I remember one of our clients was The Globe, theglobe.com. And The Globe had like at the time the biggest IPO like ever for an internet company or whatever. And it was The Globe was ridiculous. So you could make your own little website. It was like a GeoCities, so you make, or a tripod, you make your own little website and they would host it. But so we got offers to buy us for a considerable amount of money, but it was all stock. Had I done it, I would have had nothing to show for it. It wasn't worth toilet paper when it was all said and done. I'm happy I didn't go that way.
Yeah, CMGI was acquiring everyone. They acquired Engage.
CMGI went to zero. CMGI started out, their name, it stands for the College Marketing Group or something like that. CMGI started out as a direct marketing company as well, and it just became this crazy
college trade publications.
Exactly. And the origins of some of these rocket ship companies that came back to Earth, which is, I guess, why you do the podcast, is fascinating.
That company Engage is forgotten now, but very well known at the time.
Oh my God, there are so many companies that are just gone into the ether.
Yeah.
Like Engage is a great example. They just as if they never
disappeared.
As if they never existed. Even big ones, things like Excite.com or About.com or Lycos or Alta Vista. These are massive players, which are just like, they just don't even know.
Kids today have never even heard of them. It's sad.
It's unbelievable.
It's sad. Yeah. Do you consider WebConnect as the first ad network, plausibly?
You know, I don't talk about WebConnect that much. Because it's so, if you weren't there, it's almost, what are you talking about? So nobody really cares that much. And so I don't run around saying we were the first this or first that, because quite honestly, I have no idea at that moment, you know, what Kevin O'Connor was doing at that month and messing around with Poppy Tyson, who was doing stuff. And there was a bunch of people all over the place in the same 12 to 24 months that was doing stuff. If we weren't the first, we were right there. We were right there for sure.
When did you actually launch? Like, when was your first customer?
1995.
Okay.
So that was, but it's embarrassing to even say our first customer, because it was literally like, oh, you're a dentist and you have a website and you like,
well, that counts.
Two pages on your website.
That counts. So which was it, early 95 or late 95?
Oh, see, I would have to say later in 95.
The second half of the year. But you're right, that's when everything was launching. So it's hard to tell. Thank you.
And it's hard to wrap your mind around what the internet looked like at that time. It just didn't have any, it didn't look like what it is. Obviously, that's what scares me about the metaverse, because if this is what's happened in 25 years, then 25 years from now, unfortunately, I think I will have a pair of goggles on my head, even though I don't want to. Thank you.